alone with this woman's spiritual director. What we're saying, believe me, has implications. We could spend, I'm not exaggerating, 2 semesters in analyzing. Well, just to know, evil spirit is extraordinarily active and superhumanly effective in our day. Let's turn to page 141. By the way, how are these pages? Well, Xerox. You can read them at your leisure. Seeing age does not continue with giving a set of rules. He carried these rules to their conclusion, offering a definite plan of action or reaction. Once the spirit is recognized, when I repeat, you better recognize what spirit is operating and active in your life. And not just a rare occasion, but both spirits are always, that adverb is our faith, both spirits are always active in our lives. How to act in consolation. Assuming that a spiritual consolation is known to be from God, to derive maximum profit from this visitation, a person should first, quote, consider how he will conduct himself during the time of desolation and stir up a supply of strength as defense against that day, unquote. Let's be clear and honest. Consolations don't go on indefinitely. Consolations are meant to be a foretaste of heaven. And, my dear friends, nobody told you we're not in heaven yet. No doubt this storing of energy comes especially in the form of grace to be prayed for in time of consolation. However, it's especially the last part. It also means anticipating the future by thoughtful planning and fidelity to established habits which are sure to be tested in the coming period of dryness and desolation. Whatever else I've shared with you during these days, I want to urge all of you to plan your lives. I add, and plan your lives every day. In other words, anticipate the next day. Who will I be? Who will I be speaking with? What occasions of sin will I be exposed to? What problems do I foresee? What opportunities for practical charity? That if I anticipate them when they come, I will even recognize they are graces to practice charity. An unplanned life, I can say this, an unplanned life becomes a disoriented and, I have to add, a sinful life. Unless we are careful, in times of spiritual fervor, we may be tempted to indulge in pride and presumption due to overconfidence. And let me tell you, there is pride in pride. in general. Is it to my own Jesuit students over the years? My dear brethren, your greatest need in life is to practice intellectual humility. And the more intelligent a person is, the more spontaneously, naturally prone that person is to pride. But let me be less obvious. Can virtuous people be tempted to pride? Can they ever? And that is the worst kind of pride. And the devil especially has his eyes on virtuous people. Because to bring one bishop down, one priest, he is worth 1,000, say, ordinary faithful. And consequently, Ignatius goes on, he who enjoys consolation should take care to humble himself and recall how little he is able to do in times of desolation when he is left without, I put in, special grace or consolation. In other words, the holier a person is, the more humble that person must be. Without humility, no sanctity is safe. Then, with this we'll close. How to act in desolation. The basic rules to follow, or to follow in times of spiritual depression, discouragement, you name the days, is never make any change, remain firm and constant in your resolutions, which guided you the day before the desolation, or in the decision to which you adhered in the preceding consolation. Otherwise, speaking of the exercises, the whole benefit of these exercises can be lost. Instead of changing our mode of action, should rather intensify our activity against the desolation by means of prayer, meditation, and more penance. Equally profitable is reflection on the person that God has in preventing the devil to depress our ordinary fervor. In other words, we should expect dryness, desolation, depression, discouragement. So the deeds go on. And of course, the first D is discouragement. And the last D is despair. And I repeat, the more earnestly I've been trying to do God's will, the more shrewd, and I use that word advisedly, the more shrewd we must be in knowing how to cope with the evil spirit in his temptations. I said I would finish, but maybe still say a few words on the last two items. Courage in resisting the devil. As a cardinal principle in demonology. And just for the record, our second class this semester was in demonology. And don't tell me the evil spirit was happy with this course. Oh. As a cardinal principle, the devil is powerless against the grace of God. And I wouldn't be a son of St. Ignatius if I did not quote the following statement. Ignatius compares him to a woman quarreling with a man. I repeat, no apologies. I'm quoting my father and God. As long as he shows himself determined and fearless, she will give in and run away. In the same way, the enemy becomes weak, loses courage, and turns to flight with his seductions as soon as one leading a spiritual life faces his temptations boldly and does exactly the opposite of what the devil suggests. But if we lose confidence in divine help and cringe before the assault of the devil, again Ignatius, no wild animal on earth can be more fierce than the enemy of our human nature. In a nation like ours, I've said this by now how many times, we lost 90% of our Catholic seminaries. Most Catholic seminaries in America have closed. We've lost most of our Catholic schools. Closed most of our convents. Let's be sure we know the devil has been prodigiously active. And by the way, that word prodigiously in theological language means that the devil can perform prodigies. A prodigy is something which is performed, but not by God. It is beyond the powers of nature. And it is something performed by God. We call that a miracle. That's what a miracle is. Something beyond the powers of nature performed by God. Can the devil do things beyond the powers of nature? Yes. What name do we give those? We call them prodigies. Remember Moses and Pharaoh? Remember? When Moses was rejected by God to deliver his people from Egypt. And, well, Moses, to prove that he was being directed by Yahweh, performed, remember, how many miracles? And in each case, Pharaoh's demonic assistants performed an equal, we call it prodigy. Then let's close with this before we take up your questions. Manifesting the devil's intrigues. Since the devil wants to keep his machinations, his evil designs hidden, no single method of dealing with temptations is more valuable than to act against his urge to secretiveness. If one manifests, quoting Ignatius, one manifests these intrigues to his confessor or to some other spiritual person who understands the devil's malicious designs, the evil one is very much vexed. He knows, the devil knows, he cannot succeed if his evil undertaking once has been revealed. And I'm saying much more than we have time to expand on. And back to the massive sciences, at least a dozen psychological sciences, with thousands of professed promoters, all with their corresponding doctorates. The bottom line is manifestation. And what has happened in a nation like ours, where whatever word I use to make my point clear, you're not naturally a spontaneously communicative society communicating our interior. But we must be. And there are two kinds of communication we must. I use that verb deliberately. We must practice. We must, first of all, communicate our deepest, most secret, most hidden thoughts with God. And I mean what I'm saying. Of course, we place ourselves in God's presence. We know we are speaking with Him. And then tell Him everything. And use whatever language you want. The language is too strong for human ears. Close the door. Speak out loud. Share your deepest thoughts with God. I didn't learn that from books. I repeat, share your deepest thoughts with God every day. And then because in God's providence, human beings are the normal channels of grace from God to us. Someone and one is enough, or someone's, to share, again, always with prudence, with sound judgment, but be sure the one with whom you share these thoughts, first of all, will respect, deeply respect your confidence. And secondly, as a person who in your judgment can be, will be a channel of grace. And even just the sharing is already a means of obtaining God's grace. It is also a mark of prudence to seek advice from accredited sources when the mind becomes troubled by vexatious thoughts, as happens in strong temptation. But again, the proper use of our reason disposes the soul for divine assistance to overcome the enemy's designs. And this is why our second class in the next semester, first will be on world religions. What I'm doing, by the way, I'm making copies of my book of the religions of the world as your textbook for the first course. And the second course is on the priesthood. Pray, beg our Lord to give the church good, sound, holy priests. And I think I can pick up your questions. If a seriously sinful act takes knowledge and intent, if I commit the sin in a forgetful state, do I have knowledge and intent? If I commit the sin in a state where I have so deadened my conscience that I think the sin is normal behavior, do I keep sinning? am liable to punishment for the subsequent sins. Well, there is such a thing as culpable forgetfulness. As I've said more than once, we remember what we want to remember, we forget what we want to forget. And then, if I commit the sin, or I have so deadened my conscience, I think the sin is normal behavior. Do I keep sinning? You sure do. I'm sure this is not just meant for the questioner, but for all of us. In other words, we are responsible for the state of our minds and the state of our wills, and we are guilty of whatever we do, in this case sinful, because through bad habits it either dulled our minds or deadened our wills. Why would a marital union end in bodily death, especially since it is a symbol of Christ, His church, and the Old Testament covenant between God and the Israelites? Well, whoever said that the marital union ends with bodily death? Thanks for the question. The essence of marriage is not that, well, two bodies marry. In fact, for marriage even to be valid, what part of us must agree to marry, say, to marry one spouse? It must be the soul. Marriage is intended for eternity. Can we or do we suffer for other people, or strictly for our own sins, or our growth as Christians? Can we do? We all suffer for the sins, more for the sins of other people, and to obtain grace for other people. That's an article of the Catholic faith. And the more holy a person is, more God may expect that person to suffer for others, so they will either return to God if they have strayed, or expiate the sins they have committed. What prevents God's good angels from continuing to fall, as Lucifer, as any angels have? Or are they still free to fall? Well, the next question is connected with the first one. Do angels still have a free will? This is a priceless question. Look, most people think that we have a free will to choose between no one else, good and evil. Question. Did Our Lady, during her life on earth, did Our Lady have a free will?
Yes.
Did Our Lady sin?
No.
Now another question, a harder one. Could Our Lady sin? In other words, God had filled her with grace. And by the way, any translation of St. Luke that doesn't have the angel addressing Our Lady, "Hail, full of grace." Well, necessary borrow money to buy another Bible for that parish. In other words, and this Our Lady still on earth, in heaven, the saints? Do they sin? Can they sin?
No.
Next question. Do the saints in heaven have a free will?
Yes.
Do they?
Yes.
Of course. The main purpose that we have a free will is not to choose between good and evil, but to choose between what is just, good, and what is better. I hope you hear this again. Choose what is better. So, back to the good angels. What prevents God's good angels from continuing to fall, or being able to fall as Lucifer, as his angels had? Or are they still free? Sure, they are free, but not, as the questioner asks. They are not free to fall. In other words, the good angels now see the vision of God and hear it. They are as much protected from using our free will to sin as we see God. You might say, well, Father, we won't see God until we reach heaven. Not so. We are to see God here on earth. Who can finish this beatitude? Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall
see God.
Now, of course, there is seeing of God face to face in the beatific vision. But are we to see God in this world? We better see God. Well, pardon me. You husbands and wives, either you see God in your spouse, and as you people know, I know from, well, witnesses, I don't know from personal experience, but husbands and wives can, well, be a source of pain to one another. Do you agree? Is that unanimous?
Yes.
See God in what is painful. Because God is behind, beneath, below, within everything in our lives. Why isn't Christ's truth more authoritatively promulgated regarding dissident priests and bishops with the medieval authority of past popes in St. John Paul's papacy? For example, excommunications, defrocking, anathematizing, and signed a weary Catholic. A weary Catholic. Well, as I've said so many times, my 30 years in working for the Holy See has taught me many things, most of which I will never share. One thing I can tell you, that the present Holy Father, as his predecessor Paul VI, and other modern popes, they've got no illusion whatsoever what's going on. They know, shall I name the bishops, I'll spare, well, anathematize them, on the tape. Defending, promoting homosexuality. The priest that I mentioned for 10 years, voting a straight pro-abortion ticket in Congress. What the modern popes realize is that as long as there are some faithful bishops, priests, religious, and laity who know what's going on, but we better know what's going on. That's why I'm here. And know what is the truth. Am I clear? And know what is the truth. And there is hope. That's why the present Holy Father keeps telling people not to be discouraged. To hope, trust that, shall I use the first person plural, that we, with God's grace, is both retain the Catholic faith ourselves and then be God's mysterious channels of restoring a church in one country after another that had become deeply, and I mean profoundly, secularized, in some ways even paganized. In other words, what the Holy Father, the present Pope, does not want to do is what his predecessors had done. After, say, Martin Luther broke with the Catholic Church, lost his faith, his own priestly powers, he would think, having been excommunicated, condemned formally as a heretic, 3 years after he is, well, denying certain basic truths of the Catholic Church, you would think that, well, the original followers of Luther would come to their senses. What happened? We're living in an age where the media are powerfully shall I use the word debauching whole nations? And, in other words, as God himself, why does God allow sin? God does not have to just say, excommunicate, or defrunk, or anathematize. God can wipe out, right? Why does God allow the massive error and countless evils in the world today? We're dealing with a mystery. But one reason, please don't forget. God intends greater good, get that comparative degree, greater good to come out as, what word shall I use, as a result of this massive cosmic evil and would have taken place or even been, shall we say, possible, except for this error and evil to become so widespread and so deeply entrenched. But let me be clear, we've got a responsibility, a grave responsibility for others. Will we be able to order the shorter Marian Catechist course next month sometime? Thanks for the reminder. I believe there are some Xerox copies of the course still available. The printed copy, as you realize, my time is, to say the least, not my own. Tomorrow morning I'll leave for New Mexico. Return then the evening of January the 1st. First class here is January the 4th. So I would say copies, I think, are still available of the Xerox edition. The printed edition, well, if I'm not going to Calcutta, not going to St. Louis, I didn't have the class today, might have, well, finished proofreading the printed copy of the shorter course. Hopefully, copies are available. Do you know why we have not seen as yet the new translation changes to the English Catechism of the Catholic Church to be printed in pamphlet form? Well, I have a copy of the changes which I got from Rome. But the changes, first of all, are not that there are 100. They're not major changes. And this is why I was given a copy, in order to be able to update the work that I'm doing for the church. So I would say within a year at the most, hopefully by the end of next summer, English translations will be available. However, ODC wants to make sure these translations are fully approved, because not a few translations into the vernacular from the original French are not good. Because of the potential danger of false mystics and seers, is it a wise policy to avoid them all until the church passes judgment on them and on their revelations? Yes. No, I don't say avoid them all. Be kind, be gentle, be charitable. But there are not many of these mystics. As you know, there are newspapers now, Catholic publications, featuring revelations. By now, there must be hundreds. Oh, there are hundreds. Sins of omission are more difficult than sins of commission. Can you help on this question? Well, this is where an examination of conscience is indispensable. We must examine our conscience every day, as I've told, so there's more than once, and put something in writing. Invent your own hieroglyph or shorthand. And, as I think I've told you more than once, every good examination of conscience should have at least three essential parts. Number one, what should I thank God for? Go back over the last day and then thank God for the grace He's given you. And remember, there are two kinds of graces. There are pleasant graces and painful graces. Be sure to thank you for the painful graces. Secondly, sorrow. What have I done that I should not have done? What have I not done that I should have done? And then thirdly, anticipate the next day. All I can tell you is, without a daily examination of conscience, mowing what I call a moral miracle, sanctity is impossible. They're all very human beings. And regarding the sins of omission, I anticipate what I should do tomorrow. But even say, what good I can do tomorrow. Whom can I call up? What letter can I write? believe you said, next question, I believe you said Sister Josepha Menendez had been influenced by the devil and will never be a saint. How can one determine this type of demonic influence? Unless I was drunk and I don't take alcohol. I couldn't have said that she was under demonic influence. What I did say is, and the Holy See has dropped Sister Josepha's cause for beatification because of so many experiences that she had after morning mass in the community. She wouldn't show off her breakfast. Where is Sister Josepha? They looked for her. No place in the building. So then somebody thought, maybe she's outside. There she was, on the top of the roof of a tall monastery in Rome. Couldn't possibly get there by her own natural powers. In other words, there were strange powers at work, Sister Josepha's wife. And Holy See told me, her cause may be reintroduced, at least, as far as I know, for the present, her cause is not on the books. Because of the strange phenomena, which are not natural, they could be interpreted as demonic. Do you have any plans to give retreats or seminars in the Atlanta, Georgia area in 1998? No? I do not. On the other hand, I would not be unwilling. On the other hand, I've got to watch myself. So many souls to be helped. So maybe the person or persons in Atlanta could come somewhere nearer to where I live. Is a person ever too old to make the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius? Oh, what a question. No. We see without a second thought, say, he or she's becoming old. It's just the body that, as we say, grows in age. I think I quoted Mother Teresa, didn't you? Didn't I? Somebody asked her, Mother, that was, of course, a few years ago, how old are you? She said, 84 on the outside, 18 on the inside. In fact, we are to become like little children. And they grow up in our souls. The more like children, our wills are totally submissive, like a child, to the will of God. I lived a mortally sinful past. How can I help wake up my siblings? They are living in mortal sin. Well, first, decide you're going to wake them up. Wake them up. No. Of course, you don't go around with a hammer or a club. You wake people up, first of all, by the practice, and I mean every salvo, the practice of heroic charity toward those who are most estranged from God. The loudest language in the world is the language of charity. Then of the Son and the Holy Spirit. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.